If you are here, log in. I'll call the meeting to order. We have 27 members present. That is a quorum. Let's continue with the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, let's continue with communications and announcements, the Chair's reports. Are there any Supervisor Conference reports? Bridget Flood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On June 27th, I went to an education seminar in Stevens Point put on by the WCA called Community Corrections and Jail Reentry. Rock County presented its WorkEnder program, which is a program they use because they were losing so much money, fines. Because people would just sit off their fines. And it cost money to collect these fines then. So they instituted the WorkEnder program, and they saved quite a bit of money. They have guys in at home detention, and then they come in 2 days a week, and for every day that they work, they get $50 taken off their fine, and they do community service work for nonprofits in Rock County. There was also a presentation by Bayfield County on reentry initiative. Bayfield has done quite a lot of work on reentry. They got a grant from the state DOC, and basically they use an on-course course, I guess. For the prisoners that are there 30 days or more, and that consists of teaching accepting personal responsibility, discovering self-motivation, mastering self-management, employing interdependence, gaining self-awareness, adapting lifelong learning, developing emotional intelligence, and believing in yourself. And they believe that this type of education, and then encouraging further education by making this credit course for college, that's one of the things that's going to really help people re-enter. So it was pretty interesting.
Thank you very much. Arlene Benrood.
Thank you. I attended Wisconsin County Highway Association meeting in Wausau last week. We have a meeting with the Secretary of Transportation in Madison coming up in about a week and a half. Because we didn't fare very well on funding like everybody else. So we're meeting with him in Madison. After Maureen Friedland had talked about Grand River Station, I did stop down there and I took a tour of the place. It's very, very nice. I'm going to bring those up and just stick them up there, and anybody wants to take one, fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Arlene. Other reports, Don Vina.
I just wanted to announce, like I did at last month's meeting, that the fair starts on Wednesday of this week. We have a little over 11,000 entries from kids and exhibitors and people from all over the county and county surrounding. So there's going to be, we expect good weather. There's no parking charges. There's no admission charges. You have a flyer on your desk here, and there's some more out here on the table. So spread the word that we could use a good crowd out there. Last year we had a booming crowd because we had good weather. And this year there are stock car races on Friday and Saturday night. There's plenty to see, and the carnies coming in. We followed one this afternoon coming into West Salem before we came here. So they're moving in now and setting up, so it's all going to be ready for Wednesday morning, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Mr. Bina, you forgot the most important thing. There may be stock car races, there may be 11,000 entries, but the highlight of the fair is 6 o'clock on Friday, which is the celebrity goat milking contest, and you may know some of the entrants in that one. So please show up at... I'll be up there again, so please show up 6 o'clock on Friday. You can cheer or jeer, whichever comes more naturally to you. Jill Billings. Jill Billings.
Thank you. I was appointed to the WCA Audit Committee, and we met today in Madison, where we reviewed the financial statements, and the review was conducted by WIPFLE. I have information, if anybody would like information on the financial statements for WCA. Also, we decided it was prudent to not advise to increase dues this year, upcoming year, for membership to WCA. And there's talk of a possible dividend that counties will receive because of the financial straits that counties are in.
Thank you. Margaret Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a meeting of the Wisconsin Association of Local Health Departments and Boards, at which time we were brought up to speed on Wisconsin's application, or in this case, non-application for federal dollars. There are the state's position on federal grant funding is that they are not going to be submitting letters of support, which is all that they are being asked to do. And then other places like the Clearinghouse or the City of Milwaukee would apply for the grants. Some grants, the transformational grant that the CDC is has out there at the present time is was a competitive, and the next round of federal funding is a chronic disease grant, which is non-competitive. The facts of the matter is that 80% of our state vision of public health is federally funded. And when the state chooses not to submit a letter of support for these funds, Wisconsin is no longer even in the running, whether they're competitive or non-competitive. So it does have an effect on our county health department programs. The deadline is already passed for the transformational grants. The next one coming up is for chronic diseases, and the letter of support from the state needs to be in by July 5th. So there are some funding issues that are coming down the pike very quickly for Wisconsin's health departments. And at this point, you know, last year we ranked 49th out of 50th as for state funding of public health. So we're already not getting any state dollars. So the federal dollars that we're now refusing are the meat and potatoes of our public health operation in the state of Wisconsin. So to be updated later, I guess.
Thank you. Vicki Burke, did I see your hand up?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief report on the fact that we had a visit from the people in Urban Institute, National Institute of Corrections, on July 28th and 29th, and talked about our transitioning from jail to community that I've mentioned several times. I did a short article on it, and I'm going to have our IT department put it on the What's New, and then you can will be able to hit a link to go to the Urban Institute, where you'll be able to see what they say about lacrosse, the compliments they have given them. Given us, and also a better explanation or a more detailed explanation about the initiative itself, and then also you can see that the other counties that participated. So that was an interesting 2 days, and we really are appreciative of the technical assistance they've given us, and we have several different things happening to help people become more adjusted in returning to the community from our jail. And so I think it's going to be a very good program, and you'll be able to see those different things on that site. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other supervisor reports? All right, seeing none, Chair Johnson, will you take the chair, please?
Chairman Doyle.
Thank you. This is the last meeting that I will be chairing in fall. The election to replace me will be a week from Thursday. And I wanted to just say a couple words before my 10 years as County Board Chair wraps up. I'm not one for long goodbye speeches, so I don't have a lot to say. I just want to point out a few things, though. I was talking to some department heads a little while back about getting elected to the chair position in 2002. And when I ran, we had said, you know, we need to change things in La Crosse County. We need to get out of this micromanagement. You know, department heads, instead of calling the chair all the time or calling the committee chairs all the time, should be talking to our, what was at that point, our administrative coordinator. And once I got elected chair, they still kept calling me. And I couldn't figure out, why are these people still calling me? And it wasn't until a few years later that, in fact, they told me that the general consensus when I got elected in 2002 was that that was great, this change is what we've been asking for, but 2 years and this guy's out on his ear. They had little confidence that I would be around for more than one term as county board chair, and I guess I proved them wrong. I about lasted some of them, in fact. It has been a very enjoyable decade for me, and I want to talk just a little bit about some of the things that I'm most proud of. And what you're going to notice in this list of things that I mentioned is that some of those things I had a lot to do with, some I had a little to do with, some I had nothing at all to do with. And that's because I have such great people that I've been able to work with over the years. And so let me tell you some of the things that I'm most proud of that have happened over the last decade here in La Crosse County. The Household Hazardous Materials Program, the Lakeview Business Park, two great examples of collaboration. We have set the standard statewide in terms of collaboration, county to county and county to municipality, and I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of our Justice Sanctions Program, our drug court, our OWI court, where a study a while ago showed that we had the lowest rate of recidivism in the state of Wisconsin, something very much to be proud of. We now have a new veterans court. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of our family care program, our Mississippi Valley Health Services, which was a creation of Steve O'Malley and these two gentlemen up here, that is saving us about $800,000 per year. Never been done anywhere in the state of Wisconsin before, and maybe never anywhere in the United States before. Something that we can be very, very proud of. I'm also proud that and extremely proud of this one, that our jail expansion project passed on a unanimous vote. In Monroe County, they take a vote on that and they have a recall. We passed it on a unanimous vote because of people in the chair sitting right in front of me, and I thank you very much for working together on that. Two things that I am most proud of. Number one, that we are the fifth lowest per capita taxing county in the state of Wisconsin. And number two, we have one of the highest percentages of female supervisors in the state of Wisconsin. I am very proud of that. I'm not one of them, but I am still very proud of that. As I mentioned, you know, those are just a smattering of the things that we've accomplished over the last 10 years. And as I said, you know, I had little to nothing to do with many of those things. We have excellent people here. We have excellent staff, starting with our county administrator. And if people wonder why my timing for leaving when I did, in other words, pushing it off to midsummer, what that had to do with, it had a lot to do with renewing the contract for our county administrator, because I think he is the one who is going to guide us out of the wilderness that faces us economically in the upcoming years. And so I'm very pleased that we re-upped him, that we didn't cut his life sentence any bit at all. But a challenge that faces this board and the new chair going forward is these two gentlemen up here who are soon to be retiring. Those are not going to be easy shoes to fill. And they have been absolutely wonderful in terms of helping to lead our county, and they will be very much appreciated and very much missed when their retirements come around. But, you know, we have the top-level folks that are just top-notch, but starting from the lowest-paid, part-time person in the county all the way up to the top, we have great people. If we've done anything well in this county over the years, it has been to bring good people on board, and I think that is something that really is a lot to be proud of. The other thing that we've done really well is to get really good board members on the county board. You know, when I go to Madison, I notice that the Republicans are all over here talking with each other, the Democrats over there talking with each other, and rarely do they even talk between each other. That is not the case at all here. We argue on a fairly regular basis, but, you know, we can have an argument at a board meeting and afterwards go to Flipside and I'll be sitting next to Ray Ebert having a beer. By the way, I helped get this guy elected. People shouldn't forget that. You don't see that in Madison.
No.
And that is a measure of the quality of people that we have on this board. And each and every one of you is very valuable. Some of you I agree with all the time, almost all the time. Some of you I agree that today is Monday, and perhaps not much after that. But each and every one of you have been valuable members of this board. And we have a number of people who are no longer on the board, including a good friend of ours, Tom Roke, who's recently deceased, who also have made a huge mark both on this board and the county, but also on me personally. I want to thank each and every one of you for this being a great experience that I've had. Last thing I simply want to say is if there's anything that I would like as a motto on my tombstone or to be remembered for, and that is this. I would like people to be able to say, he worked with quality people and he got out of their way. Because I think really that's the most important thing that I have done since 2002 is to seek out the quality people that we have here in this room and throughout our county and get out of their way and let them do the great job that they've been able to do. So thank you for a most enjoyable decade, and I certainly look forward to working with you for the next decade.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, that gets us to our Deputy County Administrator report. Mr. Engelson.
Okay, the first item is 7-1, proclamation for July 2011, which is Nursing Home Month. Whereas La Crosse County residents or members of their family are provided affordable, quality nursing care services in a family-like environment, including those whose care may be difficult or those without financial support. And whereas staff is committed to excellence in providing care and rehabilitation to all with respect for the dignity and the rights of individuals, including those who have special physical, developmental, and mental health needs. And whereas La Crosse County operates two nursing homes, Hillview Health Care Center and Lakeview Health Center. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of July as La Crosse County Nursing Home Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to ensuring quality care to our residents in need.
Motion by Bill Brockmiller, seconded by Jerry Sobranek. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That it for you, Mr. Engelson? All right. Thank you. That gets us then to the series of reports that we're going to have tonight, and we'll start with Jeff Bleski and the update on the Assessment Reform Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and board members. You should have a packet in front of you that indicates the report of the Assessment Reform Study Committee. This was mailed to you in April with three handouts. To save paper, I did not include the three handouts. I'd like to thank the committee members. Ralph Gary chaired this fine committee. Vicki Burke, Sharon Hampson, Ray Ebert, Bill Brockmeyer, Dan Ferries were the county board members because this was a county committee. After some thought, Ken Mankey and Richard Schomburg were added from the to represent the towns. Jeff Brutus was an alternate. He probably attended just as many meetings, and the village was represented by Mary Willett from the Village of Holman. The report was dated April 11th. There's a couple handouts that I have attached to that I just want to say something briefly about. But the goal of this committee was to help the local municipalities. It wasn't so much to help La Crosse County, because I think this, as supervisors, you're all on top of the tax and assessment situation here in La Crosse County. But I think it was an eye-opener for all the committee members to actually hear what the towns are confronted with during their assessment process and some of the reform that really has to be done. The state of Wisconsin happens to be working in conjunction and parallel with some of the, at the same time, I should say, that this committee was working on some of the enhancements. So one of the things that this committee saw real quickly was contracts, uniform contracts weren't being used. Advanced assessor training wasn't being used. And continuing education was really kind of lacking. I have the Chairman Gary had asked for a town representative to speak. just to indicate that how successful this report was. So we have Raleigh Bogart, who is the new chairman for the town of Onalaska, that's going to speak, and we have Sandy Thompson, who's the town supervisor with the town of Onalaska. They're going to have a few more words to add about the improvement of the process and how it's helped them get through a real difficult time. If you look at page 2 of the report, the last paragraph on page 2, it says the committee has identified that substantial modifications in uniformity are needed to raise the standards and practices of the assessment process. Modifications to the Wisconsin Assessment Manual, electronic record keeping, and higher continuing education requirements will raise the quality of assessment services. Now, if you don't already know, the assessment that's placed on your property and the property of the taxpayers ultimately determines how much tax they're going to be or have to pay. So if they don't have a fair assessment, they're not going to pay a fair and equal tax. The last paragraph on the last page is something that's so very important, and if there's anything that each of you can take home and help your local municipalities with, it's this. Many of the local units of government have indicated they want no part of a countywide consortium. I still feel that's the best, lowest common denominator this county and the state could ever get. But statewide, the local units of government have indicated they want to keep local control of the assessment process. It's safe to say this control comes with great responsibility to participate by meeting state statutes and to make these advancements happen for consistency. The committee has indicated there should be annual evaluations of the assessors and any staff that they have. They have to ensure the statutory dates and deadlines are constantly met and meet contractual minimum standards of performance and maintenance. The county has charged me, because this committee is ongoing, even though we have a final report, that anything that comes up that's going to help the continuing education of the local municipalities, and this is the cities, villages, and townships, we have 18 of them in this county, that I share that information with them. If you go to the first handout that I have, it's labeled electronic assessment data. I'm on a state committee that's dealing with some of the same facts and misconceptions about the assessment process. I've shared this with each one of the municipalities. The second handout in the stack indicates the Wisconsin Department of Revenue updates. I'm sharing anything that I get, I'm sharing with the municipalities for their continuing education. I believe in this so much that I wish I could do the assessment work, but that's just not going to happen. There's other reports that the state committee has come up with to help the assessors. Here's a guide, about a 14-page guide on the assessment process. So I guess with that, Mr. Chairman, if we could listen to the town of Onalaska indicate their support for what we've done.
Riley and Sandy, you want to come forward?
I'm Riley Bogart, town chair for town of Onalaska. And we were put in a situation where we had to select a new assessor or go for a request for proposal fairly quickly. And we used Jeff's template that he put together for the from the reassessment committee meetings. And I'm going to turn it over to Sandy because she did all the modifications and put it together for us.
Honestly, Jeff made it very easy for us. They all have a copy of this?
They did it in the original.
Okay. The request for proposal, literally I took that report, put it into my Word program, and went in and changed things to say Town of Onalaska, changed a few dates here and there, removed a couple things in it because we weren't going to go through the time of vendor conferences and separate vendor interviews. We found out on June 1st we had lost our assessor due to his lack of continuing certification. And on June 20th, we sent out the revised request for proposal in our own form and a brief cover letter. We set a deadline, I think, of July 5th to have proposals back. We have received 6 of them back. Tomorrow night at our own town board meeting, we're going to have them all there to make their verbal presentations. All our supervisors will have reviewed their written proposals, and we anticipate making a decision tomorrow night and having our assessor replaced. We can additionally take this document and all the language that's in it and very simply and quickly create a new contract, which for as long as anyone can remember in our town, we have not had a contract with an assessor. Everything's been verbal, and we all know that it's way too important to have things in contract form now. So I started attending those assessment reform study committee meetings shortly after they started, and I probably missed only one of them. I was so well educated from informed and educated from going to those meetings, and got to know my own county supervisor Vicki Burke a lot better through that, and it's been invaluable. I don't know where we would be tonight after what happened to us on the 1st of June if we did not have this tool. So I really would like to thank everyone that was involved in it on the county level for getting this so organized and giving us a tool that is making replacing our assessor, it's responsible, it's official, it's contractual, and it's just made it so easy to work with. So thank you, Jeff, and everybody else.
Great. And thank you, Sandy and Raleigh.
Just in summary, I guess I don't have to tell everybody why the assessment process is so important, but I am. At tax time and budget time, which we're right in the middle of right now, your increase in new construction is something that the county and local municipality can use for an increase in their budget. If the assessors don't pick up that new construction, guess what? They don't have that base to end up working with, and the county doesn't have that base to work with. Every single time there's an emergency, some kind of a disaster, we get called in along with 911 to do an assessment of how much damage was done. If the assessments are not correct within that area that was damaged, we might not get federal aid. It might not be called a disaster. So there's a lot of information that depends upon that good data. On the zoning side, if somebody wants to make an improvement to their home and it's within the shoreline district, they can only make a 50% improvement based on the home value or the business value. So it behooves the assessor to have a high or the full value on that piece of property. Let's say that the property is only assessed at $100,000. They can only make $50,000 worth of improvements on that. Had it been $200,000, they would have been able to make a $100,000 improvement. Insurance companies come in and get this information all the time from us, and they even question the value that's placed on it. We had an example of a home in the town of Hamilton, and this is the only example I'm going to give. Assessed at $270,000. They said the insurance policy was $1.3 million. That's not fair. That's not your house. So, in a case like that, when they're not paying what they're supposed to, somebody else is. That's the root of why this committee was formed, and to educate the towns, cities, and villages. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Ralph, as the chair, do you have anything to add, or other committee members?
I think Carl did a pretty good job, too, and maybe we forgot to mention Carl Green. He did a great job. But I think every municipality in the La Crosse County knows more about the assessment process, what's coming down the line mm-hmm. from the state, because we had the state in here, and what to expect in the future. Our future will look like what Minnesota's doing now. They're light years ahead of us, where we could be sitting on our computer looking up Steve Doyle's property, what is assessed at, mm-hmm. what the, you know, the rooms, you just, it's unbelievable how far behind we are. The only thing you should have brought was that one map showing the U.S., and then how many taxing districts are in Wisconsin sure. compared to the rest of the country. We've got so many more. That's why the consortium idea is a good idea, mm-hmm. in my estimation, for the towns to get together, three or four of them, or the villages and the towns, or whatever combination they want, mm-hmm. because I think the consortium thing is the future for the outlying areas.
It is.
Questions or comments? Vicki Burke.
I too would like to thank Jeff for his work on this committee and the committee itself. When we first came in, certainly it's a difficult topic and a kind of a controversial topic, and the towns were skeptical of what was going to happen. But I think throughout the whole process, I learned a great deal about the whole process, and Jeff had some excellent speakers there that presented from the Department of Revenue, and then we had the people from Winona County that was very interesting. And then I think, too, the fact that we recognized that there was a problem at the state level and at the municipality level with the county, and then, too, even with homeowners themselves not being very aware of what appraisals mean and how they can access that information. So I really want to, and I want to thank Ralph for chairing that. He did a good job with a very difficult committee, and the other members who were very, I'm sure as I was when I came, knowing very little about assessment, but learning a great deal. So thanks.
Thank you. Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. Jeff, you mentioned, or maybe it was you mentioned the contract. How many of the different townships or entities have their assessors under contract, and how many of them are just verbal?
Well, in the report, I indicate that there's five communities that do not have contracts of any kind, not even verbal. That means that 13 have some to some degree, but some of the contracts did not include all the information that's included in this contract, like who does the data belong to? Who does it get turned over to after the Board of Review? Who do they call? What level of assessment should they be at on a constant basis? Do they want 25% of the property reviewed every year? Or do they want to do it through a revaluation maybe every 5 years? Those are some of the things that we were trying to get away from, because it's costing the community so much for these revaluations. If they keep their property at 100% or as close as they can every single year, they won't have to spend $80,000, $90,000 on that fifth year for a revaluation because it's already done. But the real savings is if three or four communities go together and use one. They're using one set of software, one set of records. It just makes government more transparent and open to the public.
Excuse me. So then the state doesn't have any standards that you can all use the same software?
That is the goal of the state of Wisconsin, but they're not ready for that. That was one of some of the inefficiencies that Supervisor Burke had indicated, and they're working real hard on that. As a matter of fact, one of the handouts in this guide to property assessment process, the same month we finished our report, the state came out with a contract of their own, and they used some of the data from ours, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. Other questions or comments? Don Vina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I've been talking to different town board people, and they said this thing was dead. Well, your committee report is finalized now. Where are you going with it? What's going to happen? What can we expect in the future? Because I can't visualize as to how we can get an agreement, except maybe for the town of Unalaska, which is here. How are we going to get an agreement with the town people, the people on the town boards, if they want to do their own thing, their own way? It just seems more realistic that we put the heat on the state. All of these people who are assessing have to go through a training program. And the training program, in my estimation, is what's falling down. The state is not giving the latest information to the assessors. And granted, I agree with you, because some of the assessors don't have the computer illiterate skills. A lot of them do, but not all of them do, and I know a few in particular that are a lot to be desired. The state should be coming out and requiring some of the things that you're talking about here, and the state should be retraining the assessors so that they do the job they should be doing in the first place instead of falling down. Now, keeping it at 100% is, in my estimation, going to be a costly venture. And I, at some point, would like to hear from you how you're going to do it. I know the City of La Crosse does, and they do a pretty fair job, but they're not doing it for nothing either. They have a staff over there that's much bigger than what we got in our county, and if you put all the assessors together, it might be the size of a staff we would need in order to do some of that. And I haven't heard any figures on that yet either, what the cost might be and where we would get the money for that kind of cost. But I just don't know how you're going to get the town people to go along with what you're saying here, and that's almost what we have to have.
Well, if I could answer that, it's in the report. The state wanted the to see countywide assessing, like they do in Minnesota. No, but no. That's always been in the statutes. But when there was the statewide meetings on this, and we held one of them down in the auditorium where we had the Secretary of the Department of Revenue come in, there was such an outcry from the local municipalities that they wanted to do this themselves. They said, we're capable of doing this. So the last paragraph of this report indicates this comes with great responsibility on the town's part, because the county was going to help them with this. Now we're kind of done. We're going to help educate them. But they have to take the bull by the horns and say, we accept responsibility for assessing no matter what it takes, because that's what they've indicated at these meetings. Now they can't come back and say, we don't know how to do this. That's not acceptable, because that's not what they said. Doing this part-time, if local control is doing nothing, I want part of that, right? When the state trickles down, you know, stuff to the county, you can't have it both ways. So it comes with great responsibility on their part to make it work, because they said, we can. We'll help educate them.
Ray Ebert.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think the county did a good job putting this together and helping with the contract. However, as was stated in the meeting, it is the sole and undeniable responsibility of the town elected officials to ensure fair, impartial, transparent assessment. And just as the county has some responsibilities, that's a responsibility of the towns, and the county should stay out of it, like the state should stay out of the county stuff that we don't like them telling us what to do.
Correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other comments or questions? Ralph, did you have your hand up?
Yes, kind of a takeoff on Don's. It didn't die. The towns were in agreement that as they came to more meetings, they got educated. They didn't, most of them, when maybe most of them is the wrong term, but didn't even have their records. The assessor had the records, not the, mm-hmm. You couldn't go down to the town hall. You'd have to get a hold of your assessor. The reason we migrated to the contract is I think they all agree now, though, especially the ones that don't have a contract, once they all get on a contract, and I think they'll get on this one like the town of Onalaska didn't just make minor modifications. Consortium, it means two towns or three towns or two towns and a village. Eventually that'll migrate. Maybe it's 5 years from now, maybe it's 10. Right. But they all got to at least get a contract and know what the responsibilities are. The town board members, most of them, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, didn't actually know what their responsibilities were in the assessment process. The assessor did it, mm-hmm. and they assumed that was correct. They don't have their part-time employees. They don't have the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the committee, this was an educational experience for all of us. It took a lot of time, mm-hmm. and I think it was an eye-opener for the ones that attended. Mm-hmm.
Marilyn Pedretti.
Well, thank you to the committee, first of all. I went to several of those meetings, and it was long, and it was a really good learning process. The RFP, I know that the town of Holland is certainly going to be using that. Mm-hmm. I've kept our town board apprised of what's been going on. I hope other towns have been doing the same, not just the chairman, but the whole board. So my question is, are you going to make a presentation to the WTA unit meeting at any time, or is this just sending out?
I can do that. Usually I attend maybe two of those meetings, those chapter meetings a year, but certainly if they want me, I can give them a summary and see what, just kind of pull what they're working on, because I really want you guys to read that first handout. It's got like 20 questions and answers on that. You're going to see that the work that the committee put on this is true, because the state is saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, please read that, because it's going to kind of coagulate everything that you've heard right now. So those are the things that I've been sharing with the town chairman and the clerk, because the clerk is really the custodian of the town records. The clerk has to make sure that the supervisors get this and it gets on the agenda along with the town chairman. And if they don't hear this from the assessor, because it also says in that question and answer thing, the assessors are supposed to be telling the town boards what's required of them, and that's not happening. So please read those questions and answers. Then you guys will have a real good understanding of the process.
And I think,
but yes, I will.
I think that is good for the towns as well. It's just a matter of, is that information getting fully, and it might just be a 10-minute presentation with some of this background at a unit meeting. And as far as consortiums, I know that the Town of Holland and the Town of Alaska and the Village of Holman have been talking about different things, that unlike the state, we think collaboration is a good thing. So we're going to probably talk about something like this as well. And I think that maybe it's not countywide, but to get some of us involved and you know, you're reinventing the wheel for everybody. Why not work together? So thank you for your work.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Monica Cruz.
My compliments to the committee as well and their hard work. I can certainly see why the townships want to retain some of this power for themselves. I personally think consortia are the way to go. But my question is, what are the repercussions for the townships if they don't take care of this on their own? You said it's a huge onus on them.
Well,
what if they don't follow through?
Okay. That gets back to Supervisor Bina's question about how are they going to do this, all right? It is hard to do something like this on your own. What's going to happen if they don't end up creating this, because sometimes they say it takes 4 years for things to really go into effect. I hope it doesn't end up taking that long. But if a consortium is created, I think people are waiting for that to happen to see how they do it, because it's never been done before as far as sharing a person between the municipalities, because they're going to have to figure out, where is that person housed? Where are the records going to be? Is it going to be in each one? How do people get access? Those kinds of questions. There's some logistic things about documents and maps and stuff. The county's going to help out with that. But if they don't do this, they're going to see a definite increase in their assessment costs. And they're going to go back to the state, or they're going to come back to the county and say, who's going to help us pay for that? Well, there is no money to pay for that. They said that they could do it locally. They can make it happen. So we're putting a lot of weight on them. They will end up finding out it's going to cost too much. And then once they start seeing these costs build, because it's like creating any kind of a data system from scratch, putting all the parcel information that has to be shared electronically with everybody is going to be a task in itself. Some municipalities, the town of Shelby has already got their records electronic. All right, not all of them, but they want them to be transferred over to a state system. So when they give the information to the state, the Department of Revenue, by the way, is trying to solve problems too. They've lost about 900 employees, so they can't handle paper anymore. They can't. There's nobody there to touch it. So they say, we have to get this stuff electronically, and that's the only way we're going to take it. So this thing is going to happen. It's not like they can't say, I'm not going to do it. They're going to have to. And the cost is going to be expensive. I will grant them that. But that's the reason we're recommending consortiums, because that's what this committee has taken a look at. We asked each one of the communities when we were doing a survey, how much does it cost you? Do you have a contract? They didn't even want to answer these questions because they thought that the county was going to take over something that they didn't want to give up. So they didn't want us to know this information. We were going to create a matrix and show them where the expenses are. We couldn't do that because they didn't give us any information. The town of Campbell never even supplied us with anything. We had to go through Mr. Shepherd. He had to write a letter to him. They still didn't. I don't know. You just can't pull teeth sometimes. So it's going to be an expense. There's no doubt about that. And the committee has acknowledged this fact. So if they decide not to consort, then they've got the expense because they said this is the way we want it. Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you very much, Jeff.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody.
And Riley and Sandy, appreciate you coming. That gets us next to the report by Xcel Energy on the French Island plant, and I'm going to call up Hank to introduce our two presenters on that, or three presenters, I think, probably.
Good evening. Every year we ask Xcel to come before the county board and give us an update as to how they're doing, what progress they're being made out there, etc. They are the biggest part of our solid waste disposal system. They represent 62% of our revenue that's associated with disposal, so it's an important part of our system. The other thing is we can't forget the commitment we made back in the 80s. La Crosse is only one of two counties that has gone beyond disposal in the state of Wisconsin with waste to energy. That's very important. It's a unique system that we have here. So tonight, it's a chance for Xcel to bring up to date what's happened in the last year, where are they on various things. We have three people from Xcel here. Only one is going to be making the presentation tonight. But we do have Tina here with Environmental Affairs if you have technical questions about air compliance and environmental issues. We have Mark here, who is the plant manager, who's running the plant out there. So if you have any questions about how that's performing. The presentation tonight will be by Mike Hero, who overviews the whole system and understands how this fits into Xcel. So with that, I'll introduce Mike.
Thanks, Hank. I'm glad to be back again this year. We've done this, I don't know how many years now, quite a few years. We thought this is a real good way to at least once a year give a quick snapshot on the operation of French Island plant for particularly the new county board members that maybe aren't as familiar with our operations out on French Island. So I'm going to give a quick overview, and my overview is based on the report that you have. So it's real good nighttime reading material if you want to know all the ins and outs of our plant, and I believe you have that. We put it in 8.5 by 11 size this year so you can read all the graphs a little easier. So you should have that in your packets, I believe. Just a real quick overview of Xcel Energy. We're in 8 states. We're the 4th largest combined utility in the United States. In Wisconsin here, we go from about Viroqua all the way up to Ashland area. We serve 222 communities. We have about 1,000 employees in Wisconsin. Most of them are in the Eau Claire area. Although in La Crosse here, we have, I believe it's 31 at our French Island plant and 70 at our service center where I'm out of, where we have natural gas and electric distribution operations there. So we're also the number one wind utility in the United States. Most of our wind resources are in Minnesota and the Dakotas. We'll never build one here. We just don't have enough wind over here. But we're also the number 5 solar utility in the United States. It's not from solar up here either. It's we have operations in Colorado and Texas where a lot more sun shines there. So I really like working for this company. We're doing a lot of good things environmentally, yet we're trying to serve the electric and gas needs of, I believe, over 1 million customers. So a little bit about the plant performance. Like I said, these are things in your report, so if you've read it thoroughly, this is going to be a review for you. Our two boilers operated a combined total of 10,000 hours in 2010, which is a very good operating factor. Our plant runs Monday through Friday, and then we shut down for the weekends. We generated 81,000 megawatt hours in 2010, enough electricity to supply 10,000 homes. This plant out on French Island is not large enough to supply the whole county or the whole city, but it's an important part, and we have an important partnership with the county, with the RDF operation. What we do at the plant, if you've never been there, is we burn garbage, actually RDF, refuse derived fuel. So it's not really the garbage. It's the garbage comes in. If you come out there, you'll see this huge concrete area. You won't believe all the garbage that we generate in the county. We bring the garbage in, we separate it out to burnable material. So it'd be like light plastics, this kind of stuff. We cut it up, We put it in a big bin, and then we mix that with wood waste. A lot of our wood waste are railroad ties, and there's a shredding operation just outside our plant. And so we burn, right now under permit, it's a 50-50 mix of RDF and wood. One thing we're very proud of in the environmental area, last year we had zero permit exceedances, and we were in complete compliance with all of our permits for the entire year in 2010. We're a highly regulated industry, whether it's our nuclear plants, our coal plants, and in addition, our plant here in La Crosse. A little bit on some projects and some project status. One thing we are working with the DNR is to allow us to burn more than 50% RDF. Like Hank said, we're a pretty unique plant, but there's quite a bit of data out there that we've been reviewing with the DNR that shows that we should be able to burn more RDF when we need to get the pile down and for other operational issues. And if we do that, we won't have any adverse health outcomes. So we're working hard, and Tina can address that a little bit more if there's any questions. But we've been working for quite a while on this to try to get that approved so we have a little more flexibility in what we can burn. And we hope to get the revised permit and public comments back in the fall of this year. Another thing we started in 2010, at the end of 2010, we got it running in early 2011, was an aluminum recycling process installed at the plant. You may think that everyone recycles their cans. It doesn't really work that way. Some of it does make it into the garbage stream. And this is a process where we had the ferrous that we can pull out, but this is a process where you can pull out the aluminum and then we send it up to a processing plant. But in 2010 or 2011, we're going to recycle about 214,000 pounds or 107 tons of aluminum. What we do is after we send that up, the county gets a third of that revenue is back into the county coffers for that. Xcel Energy installed the equipment for that processing. The last thing I want to talk about as far as projects goes is ash. We take all of our ash from the combustion of the RDF and the wood, and we send it to the county landfill, and it's put into a separate cell there. We've been working with Hank on this topic because our ash costs here are higher than any of our other plants in our system. Part of that is because there's a mechanism in the contract that indexes that cost up every year. So we're looking at that issue not only for that cost issue, the cost part, but also because in 5 years the cell that we do put the ash will be full. So we continue negotiations with Hank and trying to find a good solution to that issue. A couple other real quick things, as long as I have the microphone here. Our best wishes to Steve Doyle. Steve mentioned a couple of his favorite projects, and the first two that he named, I was involved with him on. One was the Lakeview Industrial Park through the local development corporation here, and the other one was the Household Hazardous Waste Facility, which Xcel Energy ended up putting a downstroke on the building of that facility. So best of luck in your new endeavors. Also, one real quick thing that really should affect everybody here and your constituents. Xcel is doing a community conservation program that we've done it in many other communities in our service territory, but this year and for 2011 and 2012, we're in the city of La Crosse. What that is we work close with Focus on Energy, and we're offering incentives, doubling of rebates, and very reduced costs on home energy audits and business energy audits. So, like I said, this year we're in the city of La Crosse. Next year we're going to be expanding it to the county of La Crosse. It's a two-year program. For example, if you were going to get a rebate for some measures you took after an audit, Xcel, you'll not only get the Focus rebate, Xcel will double that in most cases. So it's a neat and unique program. We need to do a better job of getting the word out on that program, but tomorrow, actually, at near Grounded in La Crosse, we're going to have a tent set up. We've been doing some advertising to try to promote the program. I brought my son along today and sort of dragged him along. We were at a piano lesson, but my son will be Ready Kilowatt tomorrow. If anyone remembers from the olden days, Ready Kilowatt, right. We needed someone 5 foot or under. My son will be there from 9 to 11 waving at the crowd going by and promoting energy efficiency. So
Is he going to give us his autograph before he leaves tonight?
We'll see. I'm introducing him to politics early in life here. So this is his second meeting. He came last year, too, I think. But in closing, I just wanted to say that we really enjoy our positive working relationship we have with the County of La Crosse. This is a unique plant. For the life of me, I can't understand why there's not more plants like this in the state of Wisconsin or the United States. I did some reading a few years ago. In Europe, it's illegal to just take your garbage from your curb and throw it in a dump. And I really think that we have something going that's pretty special here in La Crosse County that a lot of people don't realize. And so we really have enjoyed the collaboration with Chairman Doyle, Steve O'Malley, Hank, and the entire county board. So thank you very much for your time and attention today. And if there's any questions, like I said, if I fumble, I'm sure going to call on Tina or Mark.
Mike, I have a quick question for you. You mentioned you'd like to be able to go above the 50-50 mix so to bring the pile down sometimes. Are you indicating that sometimes there's too much to burn and you send it out to the landfill, or it just sits there for a little while?
Steve, I could finagle an answer, but I'd rather get the right one from Mark.
No, we want to know from somebody who knows what he's talking about, so we'll listen to Mark.
I think the main reason for that is the flexibility of the plant.
Okay.
We have two boilers that burn the waste, and when we have one boiler down, we have to burn all the other waste. And in the springtime, we have a lot more waste than other times. So to give us more, so that we meet our contract obligations.
Sure. Okay, thanks. I saw a few hands. John Menninger, I saw yours.
Yeah, just a couple quick questions, and one both dealing with water. Your wastewater is treated at the City of La Crosse wastewater disposal plant down in Isle of Plume?
Yes.
And I don't know how much you use, but what, do you run a pipe under the river or what? Or do you bring it out through to Campbell?
It's through the town of Campbell down Bainbridge Street.
So you don't go under the Black River?
No. I think it goes to Clinton Street and across Clinton Street.
And then the other question on wastewater, it says here that you can discharge right into the Black River or the Bay or the Slough there or whatever it is. Obviously, the garbage that's inside the containment area would not mix with rainwater or anything. I mean, like we get a big downpour like last night, you figure out a way that it doesn't run out into the grounds?
Yes, we have a stormwater plan that DNR oversees, and we have best practices that we have to follow. Like, for instance, everything has to be blacktop, and everything has to run to a grass swale. But everything that comes in the plant backs up three ramps and then dumps into the inside of the plant, and it's totally contained. Not to say that you couldn't have some fall off the edge of a truck onto the blacktop. And for instance, like one of our best practices, we sweep blacktop. We have a company come in and do the blacktop three times a week.
Oh, okay, I was going to ask about sweeping, because, you know, some of the stuff that's in these alleys is really, there's some really bad stuff that people put in the trash, and as long as it doesn't spill over or the truck's coming in and out, then I'm sure the DNR watches you pretty close.
Right, they do, and then we have to follow the best practices, which the sweeping is one of the big ones, and the biggest is having it all blacktop so that it can be picked up.
Joe Billings.
Thank you. A few years ago, there were issues with noise and complaints from people in La Crosse. What's the status on that? How many complaints have you received this last year?
I haven't received any.
I think I had one person call me and ask about it, but it's way down. When we did have those concerns, Mark and I were working together. I don't know how I ended up with this end of the stick, but I ended up taking the complaints in, and then I would sort of report back to him on how many we had. And we ended up putting sort of, I guess you could call them mufflers in or baffles on the top of our stacks to cut down on the sound wave that surprisingly was bouncing off of the bluff and that type of thing, and when there weren't many leaves on the trees. So we had to put quite a bit of money into that, but it's been almost very minimal in the last year or two. It's been a good project for us.
Once we put the equipment in, we do an annual inspection of the baffle or silencer that we put in to knock down that hertz or decibel noise that people were hearing. So we inspect that to make sure that it stays up to speed and doesn't deteriorate annually.
Okay, thank you.
Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. Because I live right under the plume of the thing over in French Island, I think things have greatly improved over there. I appreciate what you've done. And I heard somebody, I think it was, you said that you were going to reduce the amount of RDF. Does that mean you're going to be burning less railroad ties? What are you going to replace the volume with? How are you going to get the volume?
Well, what we're actually doing is asking to increase the amount of RDF from 50% to 100% at times. Right now, we're the only large waste combustor in the nation that can only burn 50%. I think, Tina, you want to make sure I'm saying this right? You wanna, okay. And so we're petitioning the state of Wisconsin to be like all the other large waste combustors. That doesn't mean that we're going to run at 100% all the time. We'll probably continue the runway where we are now, and then times that we have a unit down or have large tonnages come in the door, then we could increase that.
Okay, so there's not going to be any reduction in the burning of railroad ties. That's just going to be.
Oh, is that? There could be some reduction in the amount of railroad ties. We're looking at other wood waste fuels.
Jerry Sobranek.
And speaking on that subject, have you given any thought to biofuels, a renewable energy instead of the ties, things along that line, like the grasses?
Well, we've looked at it, and Dave Donovan out of our Madison office has looked at it, and we've gone down and talked with people down at Cassville. They burn biomass, and they're looking at others besides just wood waste fuels. We're a relatively small plant when it comes to the amount of tonnage that we go through, so we have a hard time doing that ourselves. We would have to get involved with other municipalities or people that were looking at that type of material.
We continue to look at it. I would almost argue that you could think of railroad ties as a renewable fuel. If we don't process them, they're going to sit on the edge of the railroad beds and decay away there. So I had one quick thing to add, Chairman Doyle. I forgot in my notes, but we do our tours now on the first Thursday of the month from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It used to be an open-door policy, and we were driving Mark crazy because he'd have to keep sweeping the floors for these new groups to come in. But the Thursday once a month has been working out pretty well. We did almost 900 people went through our plant last year. I would encourage particularly any new member to come over to the plant. We'll give you a semi-private tour if the Thursday doesn't work out, so you can see the plant in operation. It's real important, I think, to actually see the plant.
I want to follow that up. If you have not done that tour, sign up. You really want to do that. That's a very educational tour. I'd encourage people to do that. Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jerry brought up a good point about the cost of alternative fuels. Our RC&D for the last 4 years was working in that area in Southwest Badger. We got all the statistics you need for it, but the problem with what we're looking at either planting switchgrass on hills instead of corn and beans to stop erosion, and then harvest that switchgrass to burn, and we're working with Alliance Energy out of Cassville too. Of course, they have a problem because they applied for an expansion of the plant, and it was denied by the Public Service Commission. So they're in limbo right now too, and they're coming up with a new plan. But the cost of harvesting the woody biomass, junk trees, or whatever is too costly at this time. And the power companies or anybody else who is in the business of alternative fuels can't afford to pay the cost to go out in the woods, in the hillsides and get that. We've got all those statistics if you want them, and you'll have to call our office and you can get them. The question I had, though, is they are talking in Washington about stricter regulations on smokestack emission, and they aren't talking about us because we put a lot of money in that already, and we got it pretty well under control. But nobody knows what's going to be in the final regulations, but are they going to affect us here in regards to what we're doing? And if they do, what are the alternatives we're going to be having as a county entity involved in the operation? And I think it's a hell of a good an operation, and we're getting rid of a lot of alternative fuels that we'd be putting in the landfill before.
Tina is working on that. I'm going to let her answer that. Okay.
Can you hear me? As part of the Clean Air Act in 1990, the EPA was required to set, like you indicate, emission standards for different sectors. And actually, the municipal waste combustion sector was one of the very first ones to get regulated. Their rules passed in 1995 and were implemented in 2000. So the waste combustor industry has been regulated like that. Right now, they are just, I shouldn't say just, because they had passed some rules in 2005 and they got remanded and whatever. But they're just getting around to coal-fired plants now. They're just getting around to other types of plants, wood-fired plants, that kind of thing. Now, it's all the same type of regulations. They're very strict. They're going to require additional pollution controls in all these facilities. But from the waste combustor standpoint, like I said, we were the first ones to get regulated, or one of the first ones. Those rules get reviewed every 5 years. So every 5 years, they could look at those rules and say, well, you know, the technology has improved. Maybe we can get some more reductions. So this plant does get reviewed every 5 years by the EPA.
And I think you said earlier that you can't see why there aren't any more plants coming on board than what there are. You know, putting a plant together, if you know and I know, isn't a cheap operation. You know, you got to have a few bucks. You got to have the willpower to stand behind what you're doing. And, you know, what do? Put $3.5 million into smokestack emission out there so that we didn't get into trouble by the DNR and the EPA. So it's not a cheap operation by any means.
Monica Cruz.
Thank you. You spoke of the fact that the ash containment area will be full within 5 years. We found some profitable ways to use the methane out at the landfill. Is there any way that we could, you know, use the ash for something rather than just storing it there? Is there any industrial use? Is there some way that we can recycle that ash and use it and not fill the landfill up with it?
Yes, we're looking into beneficial reuse. Part of our contracts is that we have to take our ash to La Crosse County, and that's why Hank and I are working together. I think Hank's going to talk a little bit about the ash later. But one of the things that we can do is we can look for beneficial reuse, like to take it and mix it with blacktop. You need to have the right group of people working together for that. That's kind of looking at. We're looking at co-mingling the ash. It's acceptable at any commercial landfill, looking at using it for road base in the landfills if we can. And those are some of the things that we've started to talk about. We've had these conversations in the past, but the dollars always kind of got in the way. But now it looks like we both need to find some solutions. So there's probably something out there that we can do. And again, I think Hank is going to address that a little later.
Marilyn Pedretti.
Thank you. On page 10, I think that graph is an example of why we need the EPA. If we didn't have those standards, 2001, think of where we'd be with the amount of pollutants in the air. If the RDF increases, do those numbers change, do you think?
You know, as part of this whole process to get the ability to burn over 50%, we had to do stack tests, and we did do that at 70% and 100% RDF. In fact, we've done it more than once over the last 5 years. And actually, we've seen our emissions actually decrease as we increase the RDF percentage. So the answer I can give you right now is the test data that we have indicates that, no, we will not be increasing emissions if we burn 100%.
Okay. And on that same page, you talk about in 2010, there was a fee payment to the DNR of $13,600. Is this pretty typical every year, or is this a higher number?
Well, that's about the same every year. We pay $35.71 a ton for certain pollutants, and that's statewide, depending upon, you know.
But if you decrease the amount of pollutants, you wouldn't have to pay as much.
Well, these are things like SO2, NOx, some of your you know, your regular criteria pollutants that have been regulated for many, many years.
Okay.
So yeah, if those do go down, sure, the money will go down. But because we burn about the same amount of fuel every year, they stay pretty much the same.
And I just want to say thank you for getting the various metals out. I think that is wonderful. And I know you guys spent a lot of money on that equipment. And I, for one, appreciate the fact that we're recycling as much as we can. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Sharon Hampson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had that home audit, home energy audit done, and it was $40 for a $350 operation. The results they gave me were very detailed and very easy to understand. It's clear what I need to do to improve the energy efficiency of my house, and I appreciate that, and I encourage anyone else to do that. So right now it's the City of La Crosse. When will it go elsewhere?
We'll be in the City of La Crosse for, it's a two-year program.
Okay.
So we'll be here this year and next year, and starting in 2012, then I believe it's the rest of the county. I was thinking it's just certain municipalities, but I'm pretty sure it's the rest of the county. And it will be a two-year cycle then also. So it'll be 2012, 2013. So I would just encourage you to spread the word, because you know, it's, you don't want to spend a ton of money on advertising for these type of things, but we're doing everything we can to get the word out. And selfishly, I'd like to have better results than Eau Claire had.
That won't be hard to do. I saw just a little story in the paper, and that's where I saw it. But everybody should spread the word. It's really a very beneficial package.
Thank you. Sure. If you give me your name and number, I'll have someone get a hold of you. Oh, for 2012, probably want to hold off for the rest of the county until we end this year with the city. But no, you'll be able to apply for it next year, and we'll get you in for the audits.
Tara Johnson.
You said businesses also, homes and businesses?
Yes.
Thank
small,
you.
Small businesses. Like, we're not going to be doing train company or the brewery or anyone like that. It's meant for small businesses. In fact, this event tomorrow, we're partnering with Downtown Main Street in La Crosse to go to some of the street side businesses.
Great. Any other questions? Thank you very much for a very informative report.
Thank
appreciate
you.
All three of you.
Yep.
See you. And that gets us back to Hank. Uh-oh.
Things up a little bit tonight. I'm going to talk to you from this location.
I'm here to talk about the solid waste department and landfill tipping fees. And there's four reasons I'm here tonight to talk to you. First thing is, lots happened in the last 3 years. You've heard about a lot of changes. You've seen them. You as a county board have approved the fee changes. And some things have gone up, some things have gone down, etc. So I want to keep you up to date in what's happening so you're aware of that. There's also been some misinformation about solid waste disposal fees. And so I want to give you the clear facts so you understand what's going on and you know that you have a source you can come to and you can take away from the handout some of the facts as they are. The other thing is, we're getting ready for the 2012 budget. And I can see right now everybody went like this. Relax, take a deep breath. The four biggest categories of waste, as I'm passing the budget on to finance right now, we are not expecting to have a 1 cent increase on any of those fees. So I hope that's going to be good. But I want to show you how this is all fitting together, how it's impacting some other things. Finally, the last thing I want to do is that the policy board, the public works infrastructure, and you as a county board have approved a number of recommendations we brought to you in the last 2 or 3 years. I want to give you feedback. These things are working out quite well. We're doing good, and I want you to see that. So, you know of the solid waste department. You hear me brand it as the responsible resource, and you hear me consistently talking about that. We want to create economic stability in our solid waste system in our community. We want to be environmentally sound. We want to be community supported and a good neighbor in the community. When you do those three things, you achieve sustainability. And so that's why we're branding ourselves as the responsible resource. The Wisconsin DNR saw this. They awarded us green tier status. We are the first landfill, and you, La Crosse County, are the first municipal entity in the green tier program. That's a tremendous honor. I'm going to cover current tipping fees, a little history of tipping fees. I'm going to go back 20 years so you can look at how this has changed. I'm going to talk about CPI. How is that impacting the solid waste department, our contractors? How is it impacting Excel? I'm going to talk about the rebate, because that was a big change here a year ago, and it affects waste security. There's a lot of waste that leaves our county, and if we lose that waste, then we become less efficient. I'm going to compare us to other facilities. I'm going to talk a little bit about the future and then give you a few conclusions on this and answer any questions that you might have. If you go onto the website, you can find the rates. You approve these each year in the great big rate list for the county. The three big ones that you need to know are right on the top. The first one is that construction demolition materials are $59 a ton. If you have municipal solid waste and you bring it to the landfill, it's $59 a ton. If you take refuse in that to Excel, where they can process it into the energy, it's $61 a ton. Now, if you get into the rates, you'll see that there's just a ton of rates. I think there's over 25 different rates. And some are very low. Contaminated soil, $12. Last year, if you had friable asbestos, $200 a ton. If you have tires, $200 a ton. All sorts of different rates. The whole reason for that is that garbage is not trash, is not refuse. It is all very different. Think of your garbage that comes out of your house and then look down the street to your neighbor where he puts the mattresses, bulkies, and other things. It's garbage, but it's very different. One is bulky, one is not. Think of trash, which doesn't have a lot of food waste in it. Very different. Think about demolition. When you tear down a house and you have a lot of wood and drywall, that's one type of demolition. Think of the demolition when you tear down that brick building with concrete, brick, and other materials. It's very different. When you get into the category of special wastes, every week, my head spins. Last week it was circus manure. It can be sludge. It can be the dust from the air filters in a factory. It can be foundry sand. It can be a batch of food that is off spec. It has to be disposed of. A year ago, we had a trailer load of furniture that came in from China, got infected with a bug. They put insecticide in the trailer, killed all the bugs, and they said, "We want you to destroy our furniture." So they dumped out beautiful furniture in the landfill, and we ran it over with a compactor. But those are the oddball things that you have to take care of. So let's focus for a second on tonnage and revenue. And I'm going to try something here with you. If you look at tonnage here, here is Excel. And they represent 52% of our tonnage, okay? The next biggest one is municipal solid waste coming to the landfill, 10%. Construction and C&D is about 7%. And the ash that comes back to us from Excel is 7%. So those four waste types, if you focus on those four waste types, even though we get more than 50 different waste types, that accounts for 78% of our tonnage. If you look on this side of it, look at Excel over here. The revenue from Excel is 60%. The revenue from municipal solid waste here is 13%, from construction demolition 7%. The revenue from ash is about 6%. That is 89% of our revenue. So the important thing here is those four wastes are where we have to stay focused on as a business and manage those four wastes. Stumps are important, okay, but they're not in the big categories here. Our citizens' use of the container areas, important to us, but they're not where the big money is. So if you want to focus on 90% of our revenue or 80% of our tonnage, stay focused on those four. If you also look at this, I lost my red dot. There it is. total tons, about 141,000. That's Excel and the landfill together. Total revenue from these is $7,300,000. This was in 2010. Now, we actually generate more revenue because we have permits. We get fuel credits from Excel, and there's some other sources of revenue that we get. So the revenue in the department's higher than this. This is the disposal revenue. Here's the graph, then, that shows you those big four over a 21-year period. And what you see on the top there, of course, is municipal solid waste. Then what you see below that is Excel. There's construction and demolition, and there is ash. So what's the first thing that hits you when you look at this chart?
The growing ash.
Which one of these wastes do you think is tied to a CPI? The ash. In our contract with L, it's tied to a CPI. And so you can see what's happened is that that's increased from less than $30 to approaching $50. No wonder Excel is concerned. It's a legitimate concern. We've got to work together and figure out how to deal with that. But that's the power of the CPI on rate increases over that time period. There's something else, though, you should notice about this graph, the opposite of what's happening with the ash. Look how flat that is for a 21-year period. That's awfully flat. In fact, there are great periods here. Look at C and D here for a second, though. It started out here very low. It went up, stayed very flat, and then right about here, it took a jump, took another jump, took another jump. And so it appears that something happened here with C and D in these last couple years. Well, Hank joined the county. I guess that was it, huh? What happened is in 2008... the old C&D site was closed, so the C&D had to go into our municipal site, which has a very modern liner. And so as we discussed this with the Public Works Infrastructure Committee and Policy Board, we said, you know, it takes up the same space as garbage. Should it be priced anything less? And during our discussions, that was what we brought to you in the budget last year. We said they're really taking up the same space. Why are they priced so different? Let's put together a blended rate at $59. That's what we did. And so you see that change that occurred there. Should I take questions?
Sure. Jerry Sobranek.
Just a short one, Hank. As you go along your presentation, to help us understand, could you explain to us what some of these letters mean, like C&D and MSW and things like that, to help us understand?
Yep. Sorry for my jargon. MSW is Municipal Solid Waste. Excel would be the waste from your house and my house that goes to Excel to be burned. C&D is construction and demolition debris. So I'll call it demo, we'll call it construction debris, we call it C&D. And then ash will be the material that when Excel burns the refuse-derived fuel, it produces an ash that comes back to us. Now that ash is different than La Crosse University of Burns coal. We get that coal ash. There are other plants that burn some fuels that we get that ash, but this is the Excel ash that we're talking about here. One other thing that I think is real interesting on this graph, and I think you could win a trivia contest with this, if you said true or false, our price today on municipal solid waste at the landfill is less than it was in 1991. Most people would say, well, it can't be less. That's false. Take a look at it. $59. 20 years ago, it was $60. The price today at the landfill for municipal solid waste is $1 a ton less than 20 years ago. That's interesting.
John Meyer?
That C&D one, is, how current is that? It would seem like that would be off the chart now after all the storms.
Surprisingly not. There's been 800 tons that came in from the tornado damage to date. We take normally around 200, a little bit more tons per day. So we haven't had a week's worth of material at the landfill from that storm damage. That shows you how much waste is being generated in our system that's coming from other areas. Not to say that a different tornado could have had a different effect or a flood could have had a different effect. It could have. But it's been surprising that tornado damage didn't produce as much waste as we might think it would be. There's something else that's really important. You probably saw it Sunday night in Channel 8, the shingles.
Yeah.
We took 6,000 tons of shingles last year. All of that got recycled. Normally that would have gone into a landfill. This year we've already taken 4,000 tons of shingles. That would have made up a big part of the storm damage. That'll get recycled so it won't go into the landfill.
It isn't just a tornado, it's a storm, rainstorm in April.
Yes, the hail. Yep. So here's the CPI, and this is how it's changed over time. It's been an average increase of 2.7% for this 21-year period. The only thing I want you to note on here is just the slope of that line. You can see how it rises and how different it is than our pricing. Here's the DNR fees. Yowzer. 20 years ago, they were 61 cents. Today, they're $13. This represents a threefold increase. This represented a fourfold increase. And so, you know, that's a tremendous change that we've experienced. Do you think it was reflected in our fees? It was, but not as much as you might think. If you go back here and you put the two graphs side by side, you can see back here when there was a significant increase in fees. Yep, you can see the bump right there. Then come over here and you look at a very significant increase of fees here. You can't find the bump. We absorbed much of that within the department. We did things with the blended rates and other things. You know, now if you're producing a lot of C&D, you might say, I'll tell you where the bump is. It's with me, because C&D was bumped up. But they needed to be bumped up because they weren't paying their fair share in the landfill site. Now, I can take you through a bunch of graphs. I'm not. But I'm just going to illustrate some stuff. We put together this information. We work with the finance department and the accountant clerk that we have out at the site. And we look at this information, and we're studying it. Here is the cost at Excel. And you can see how it's gone up, but very slowly. Here is, if you applied the CPI to it, you'd be way up here. You'd be 20-some dollars more. Here is Excel's cost to run their plant and handle it, what they bill us, is this line. You can see it's increasing, not quite as fast as the CPI, this line up here, but it's increasing faster than our rate of increase that we are charging our customers. That can't last forever. What is this difference then between what Excel charges us here on the black line and what we charge customers to dump their waste there? Well, it's 10, 20, looks like it's about 25, not quite $30. What is that? That's the county's cost to pay off the debt for Excel. That's the county's cost to administer that program, to do the billing, because we do all the billing for the waste that goes to that facility. So that difference you see there is the retirement of our debt and our administrative costs to run the waste energy. We're not running the plant, et cetera. They do all the capital investment. Take a look at the landfills graphs the same way. Here is the what it costs to get rid of garbage in the landfill site. It's this curve here. And you see that, you know, we've changed this curve because of the blended rate. If you look at the CPI on it, it would be up here. It's not. And then if you look at what St. Joe's charges us, you see that it's changed there. Much less than the CPI. Less than the rate of increase you saw at Excel. Why? Because in our contract with St. Joe's, we said we're going to restrict you to 80% of the CPI. So we had a different factor, a different formula for them. But look at the difference between St. Joe's, what they charge us, and what we charge our customers. It's a lot more than Excel, that difference, right? 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. You know why that is? Because we pay for the liners. Whereas Excel is paying all their capital costs, we're paying the capital to build our liners and other things at the landfill. So you see this on the graphs. Now, I bring this all up to you just to show you the wealth of information we have, the fact that it's being looked at and studied, and that we make decisions based on this information. Don?
I'm kind of curious, what CPI are you using? Is it a local CPI? Is it a national CPI? CPIs are put together all over the country using different extremities all over the place. So what is this based on? Is that the local La Crosse County?
No, it's the CPIU, which is urban. So it's a national, I believe it's a national CPI index for urban areas.
Okay, so that's the one you're using,
yep,
up there.
And that's the one that was required in the contracts, the
okay,
people.
So it's the national.
Yep.
Okay, because, you know, the government is using it too. And anybody over 65 isn't getting a rate increase just because they haven't got any money anymore.
Yep. So let me switch. I showed you the rates. I showed you what's going on and things that are from that. But let's talk about this important subject here. What's the difference between a rebate and a volume-based pricing? In a volume-based pricing, if you're a big customer and you come in there and say, I buy 10,000 square feet of carpet every day, you get a discount based on volume. If you're like me, a little homeowner, and I want to carpet a closet, well, Hank, you don't get no discount. That's the way it is. Same thing in garbage industry. If you're a big hauler and you got a lot of trucks and a lot of garbage, you go to a private site, you get lunch, and they take you out, and they talk about a volume price discount. Okay? What's a rebate? Well, if Marilyn has one garbage truck, she gets the same rebate that Leon has for having 150 garbage trucks. And you get the same exact rebate, okay? The public solid waste system subscribes to the rebate theory because it provides better competition amongst local haulers. The large national waste firms like the volume-based pricing because they get their biggest customers to drive out the smaller customers. Have you seen the acquisition then of some of the larger companies become part of the national company? It's called gaining control and being monopolistic. And so it's a different system. Our system supports the local hauler and is more fair to them. So let's see if it's working. And let's see what the rebate of that impact is. Now, there are three rebates in our system. The first rebate is for government. If you're a local municipality, we give you a 1% rebate. We already have contracts with you to use Excel and other things, but we offer a 1% rebate if you bring all of your waste to us. Not particularly significant. At these dollar amounts, you're talking half dollar, 60 cents, somewhere in that range. If you're a business, we offer 5% if you direct all your waste to our system, okay? And remember, a rebate goes to the person who pays the disposal bill. So it can't go to all three people. It can't go to two. If you have a hauler and the city's paying it, well, the city gets it, the hauler doesn't. If the hall is paying the bill, he gets it, the city doesn't. And this is what we changed last year in our rebate program. We went to, for the haulers, if you signed up for 1 year, you got 7%. If you signed up for 3 years, brought all your waste to us, you got 9%. When you get up here, this is significant. Now you're talking $5 to $6 in these rebates, and you take that off the pricing. That's pretty good. So whether you're a small company or whether you're a large company in our area, you can save some significant money on your disposal bill. The unintended consequence of this change, which was beneficial to La Crosse County, was that some municipalities gave up their rebate and said, fine, Harters, you can pay the disposal bill to the county and you'll get the 7% rebate. And by the way, we want half of it. And so some of these municipalities went from getting a 1% rebate from us to getting 3.5%. Unintended consequence that had great value to our county, because the money that we channeled back for waste security to a hauler got channeled back to the municipality and helped reduce their bill. So here is... here is the Harters. They are one of the two biggest. They're one of two companies that has transfer stations. Waste Management is the other. Waste Management has not signed the rebate agreement yet. If you look at this number right here, and you compare where Harters was in 2010 to this year, we have picked up, according to our records, 5,000 tons of waste from them that they're not transporting out of the county. That means to the solid waste department, we have picked up almost $300,000 worth of revenue. Yes, you're correct. You don't have this because as Steve was leaving for his bike ride, he said, make sure you get this into your presentation. So I apologize for not having that in there. But he wanted me to pull the last data from the end of June, get that to you so you can see that. Now, we are giving back more money in rebates this year than we did in the previous year because of the change in this rebates, and because Harters has now entered the program, and because Harters is paying the bill for paying the disposal bill now for City of La Crosse and Onalaska, so that we have to give them a 7% rebate on that, where before we were giving those municipalities a 1% rebate. Yes?
Why are we only giving municipalities 1% in the first place and giving private businesses?
Part of the reason was that we already had contracts in place with them for them to use Excel. They were obligated to do that. And the amount of waste that was not going to Excel was pretty small. And so a large rebate was an issue. Whether that's fair or not, I don't know. That's how the original rebate programs got set up. We questioned all of the rebate programs a year and a half ago. And we said we'd like to maybe adjust all of the rebate programs, but let's just do them one at a time because it's hard. So we said let's first tackle the one with the haulers because they really control the waste more so than the cities. And so that's what we did. If that is a policy issue, you know, that's good for you to get that back to Leon so he can raise that at the policy board and we can continue to discuss that as we move forward. Now I'm going to move from the rebates, which from what I'm seeing is looking pretty good. You know, yes, there's two big customers we don't have. Waste Management, there's roughly 20,000 tons of waste per year. And Ronnie's cleanup service, who said he'll never sign a rebate agreement with the county. So that's the way it is. Let's move from rebates, though, then to what is the average landfill rate, okay? And this is going to start getting us into comparison with other landfills. Now, I'm going to go back to 2010. And we charged $68 a ton for municipal solid waste. Remember, we adjusted the rate down to $59 in 2011. But I got to go back to 2010 to show you this data. C&D construction demolition at that time was 48. That's been raised. Now that gets real confusing. What's the rate at the landfill? Well, I can give you 25 different rates. You know, so what is the rate? So what I did is I took the revenue generated at the landfill from handling garbage or trash or waste materials. I divided it by the total number of tons we received, and the average rate was $42.11. That surprised me. And then I realized it makes perfect sense. We try and divert as much waste as we can not to go into the landfill. Concrete and asphalt comes to the landfill, we take it for free. We grind it up and then it's recycled and used as road base and other things. If you bring clean shingles to us, we only charge you $25 a ton. If you bring dirty shingles to us where you left paper and wood and other stuff in it, it goes into demolition at $59. So if you're smart and you use our program, the net impact on you, and you help us with the diversion of waste and the recycling, you will benefit, and you will see that that's a pretty darn effective rate. The other interesting thing is that rate is before any rebate was applied. So if you take some money off, it could even be potentially less. So how do we compare?
Is that a professional model?
You know what that is? If Ray was here, that's one of the stumps he wanted me to take. Now, we developed a policy, but look at the size of that stump. So here's a report that's done every year by DNR. And what they do is they survey all the landfills in the state, and they survey them in some of the surrounding states, and they put this table together as to what these costs were. So where you see here the red, that's us. That's La Crosse. If you look at the overall average in Wisconsin, it's right here, $51.41. Our rate is $59 now with the blended rate. If you look at the average, and you can see there's some real differences. If you go to the Michigan border sites, it's hard to find a landfill when you get up into the Michigan borders areas. If you get to the Minnesota border, it's a little bit higher than the Wisconsin border for various reasons. The Illinois border, a little bit cheaper. In Minnesota, the price is a little bit cheaper than us. Iowa, even cheaper. It shows you all different rates. The average is around $52.83. We're at $59. That's not bad. In overall comparison. Now, does that mean that there isn't a waste management site in Wisconsin that if you're a volume-based customer that you might be able to get a rate of $35.38? Absolutely. You might be able to get that. How do we compare with other counties then immediately around us that have landfills? And there are four immediate comparisons. Adams County, Vernon County, Judon County, Monroe County have landfill sites. And you can see here we are at La Crosse, and you know our C&D and municipal solid waste rate is the same. Adams County is $1 more expensive. Vernon County to our site is almost the same for municipal solid waste. They're the only one of these counties that has a split rate yet between C&D and municipal solid waste. Juneau County, I mentioned Monroe County is the lowest of the pack. So we're setting pretty well in, you know, with our neighbors in this system. If you put all that information on a graph, and DNR did this, this is what they showed. And where you see where we were prior to 2011 there, our C&D was at the bottom of the pack. Our municipal solid waste was at the top of the pack. You can see that the other people's landfills were in between here, and they had different trends, if you will. This is where we went to. With our blended rate, this is where we've projected and where we are for 2011. Now, if you go back here, you don't have to be a statistician, a mathematician, an engineer, or anybody else to look at this graph and draw a line. Sure looks like to me this is where people are going to be going. And I think we've positioned ourselves to be at or a little bit below where I think the trend is in the future. Can't finish this discussion without talking about waste to energy. How do we compare with waste to energy? The average for waste to energy is here. Now, there's about 80-some facilities in the United States. And you could go down to Florida, and there are some 4,000-ton-a-day plants, if you can imagine that. And there are some facilities that their debt is paid. And so it's very easy for them to make money. It's easy when you have a big economy of scale. I asked our consultant to zero in on facilities that were similarly sized to our facility, in that 200, 500-ton range, very comparable to ours. They picked about 9 or 10. They found the average was 74. You remember from this, we're at 61. So again, I think from a waste to energy standpoint, if anything, this would appear to tell me we're probably underpriced in waste to energy right now. So the conclusion of this presentation for you, number one, our tipping fees. We're supporting waste energy. It's something we had a commitment to back in the 1980s. It is more expensive than landfilling. It provides a lot of benefits. One of those benefits is that we're fueling over 10,000 homes in our community, that there are a bunch of other sustainable benefits to waste to energy that we are achieving. The second thing that you see here is that we have a state-of-the-art environmentally sound landfill. And you've seen that, and that's been validated by DNR giving us green tier status on that. We're not just talking about disposing of waste. 52% of the waste that comes to La Crosse County doesn't go into the landfill, doesn't get buried. That is a very big number. There are a number of communities who have adopted a zero waste goal, and they're reaching 30% that they've diverted from landfills, and they're very happy. They should be jealous of what we're doing. You certainly know that we're an enterprise fund, that this is a self-sustaining program. We're not on the general fund, with the exception of the HHM facility with its $1 per person contribution. But the rest of the solid waste department is not on the general fund. The other thing that you see, and I talked about the rebate program, which appears to be working very well, it was the solid waste assessment that was done with the City of La Crosse and Onalaska. It found that because of the rebate programs, our lease programs, our other things for our haulers, we have made them more competitive, where in some cities they're dominated by one or two national players. We have many haulers that you can turn to here. They're local. And what they found is that the cost for garbage collection in our communities was lower than 10 or 12 comparable communities to La Crosse here. So the solid waste system is having an impact on the competition of hauling, and it's keeping the prices down. That's a cost savings to our community. So the really easy way of saying it is that the tipping fees in our program are, they're supporting stakeholders. When you have private facilities and working with your disposal, you're supporting stockholders. Those are the big differences. The rebate program modifications have increased tonnage. We've seen it. It's above expectations, actually. And we've seen a significant increase in revenue this year for this also. Other landfills throughout our nation, throughout our state, are suffering from what's called the shrinking yard. One yard of garbage is now a lot smaller for those landfills. That's because people are doing more recycling, they're diverting waste, various reasons it's moving about. Our system is growing. It doesn't mean we're disposing of more waste, but we're handling it differently, better. and we're capturing the waste that was leaving our county. So all those things are really good. Can I answer any questions?
Questions? Jeff Schrader.
Thank you. Hank, do you, when you get demolition waste, do you then sell it back to XL?
No.
That goes all, say, like the clean demolition waste, that would stay in the landfill?
If you have, and that word's funny, clean demolition waste. But you're absolutely right, because I call certain types of garbage clean. The problem is when you get what's to a contractor, clean demolition waste, he'll have wallboard in it, he'll have metal, he'll have a number of things. And unfortunately, that's not good for our shredding process out at the landfill, and it's not good as a fuel. So what we have offered to contractors as an alternative is that if at your job site, put two trailers out there, two roll-off containers, throw all your clean pallets, untreated, unpainted, in that container, throw all your other demolition, the wallboard and the foam insulation, the other stuff in this other container. We'll take that demolition at the $59 rate. If you bring us the clean wood and you do that separation, we'll take it at $20 a ton. We grind it up, doesn't go into the landfill, it gets sold back to Excel then as a fuel. So that's how we tried to affect it. You know, in the future, might there be a construction and demolition separation program? It's mentioned in the sustainability goals for the county, but that's in our future.
Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you, Hank. Given all the damage recently from hail, the amount of shingles has to far exceed the normal amount. So based on the revenue from this recent hailstorm, what do you estimate the revenue from this windfall? No pun intended.
We expect to get 4,000 tons of shingles more this year. Times 25, that's $100,000. So we expect $100,000 more revenue than we had budgeted for this year for the shingles. Yep. Now, the homeowners, take that same 4,000 tons of shingles. They're saving $34 a ton. Their savings will be $130,000. That shingle recycling program has been very beneficial to them if they separate it. That's the one component, though, I'm going to have to bring to Public Works Committee, is that we're charging $25 a ton, and I'm paying St. Joe's $25.50 to shred them. I'm losing money. And that's the one I may have to adjust next year.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? All right, seeing none, that was very good, Hank. Thank you very much. And I think that's the end of the reports. We have cards and correspondence on the board over there. No committee meetings during recess, so we're up to suggestions for future agenda topics or announcements. Anybody have any of those? Arlene Benrood.
Thank you. I want you to put on the agenda, like in a week or two when we have our county board meeting, as far as the picnic goes, and if you can send around a sheet of paper and have the people sign. And also,
are you going to look for money on that date too then?
Yeah, just a minute. I had to find out how much money it was. $11. Also, if maybe Jenny or someone can send to just put notes to the department heads or whatever to make sure that they know about it also.
And again, the date is the August county board meeting.
Right, and we're going to have county board at 9 in the morning. Is that correct? Right.
And by tradition, the county board chair buys a half barrel of beer, and that isn't going to be me. That's the other reason why I timed my resignation as I did.
Oh, that's why you retire.
There you go. The truth comes out.
Well, we could have collected that money if you would have stayed.
I heard IOU mentioned before. We'll look at that for this.
But anyway, I just want to at least bring that up for...
Okay, so Ginny, if you can do a pass-around sheet for next Thursday, that'd be great. And probably with an envelope. Well, what I think would be best is for people to give the money to Arlene and Jerry rather than sticking an envelope with pass-around, otherwise it just gets all mixed up.
Right, absolutely.
So...
And then, like, the people at the courthouse can always play Jenny, and that's what they did before with their other...
And you could just write a check out to La Crosse County, I assume, right? Is that how we do it? And then we can just run it through the treasurer's office if we need to.
Oh, you mean for the other, like, department heads or whoever's coming?
Well, for people that want to pay, if you've got $11, who do you write your check out to if you write a check?
I don't care.
You could write it out to you or you could write it out to the county. Either way,
Either way, I'll get it cashed.
There you go. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Arlene and Jerry. Any other announcements or future agenda issues? If not, that gets us again back. Oops. Terry Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wish that I had talked to Vicki about this ahead of time, but do we have consensus on what's happening ahead of the 6 o'clock meeting next Thursday? In terms of talking, there were some people, the suggestion was made last month about having opportunity to ask questions of whoever's running for county board chair in advance, you know, like at 5 o'clock or something like that. Do we have consensus on that, and can we?
Do people want to do that, or is that not necessary? What's the pleasure of the board? Jeff Schrader.
I believe that was recommended by, or asked by Supervisor Ebert, am I correct? And I thought at that time it was the consensus it would be a good idea before the county board meeting.
My understanding was it would be at this next meeting when we're having the election, to be immediately before the election. Pardon? Well, right, before, I mean, the election is going to be shortly after we start the meeting, so it'd be right before the meeting. 5 o'clock seems kind of like a way early. 5:30, what would people think of that? Is that enough time to throw out any questions you have? Jill?
I don't know if we can take a formal vote on this, but my recollection is that Supervisor Ebert made the suggestion and you said, yeah, I think that's a good idea, but I don't know that the board got to really weigh in on that. I don't know if we can, we're not noticed for a vote. I don't know.
I'm kind of thinking in terms of the process is it doesn't have to be something really formal. I mean, Vicki and Tara can sit next door, and if people want to come and ask them questions, they do. And if you don't want to come, you don't have to. What do you think of that? Very informal process, and people can take advantage of it as they will. That sound all right?
Yes.
Okay. Jeff Schrader.
Margaret Wood has something up on the teleprompter here. It says the notice will be sent out.
Yeah, it'll be mentioned that there will be that ahead of time because we could have a quorum at that point, and so we have to do a notice. So Bill and Ginny will work in terms of the specific language on that. But, yeah, it'll be formally noticed. All right, so we're okay on that. If you're interested, it should be next door, 5:30, a week from Thursday, County Board Day. Any other announcements or future agenda issues? If not, Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. Just a point to ponder, and you can apply this to your favorite entity or group, but my philosophy is never, ever underestimate the power of stupid people in large groups. With that, I move the adjourn.
Moved by Jerry Sobranek, second by Bill Brockmiller. All in favor, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Is that why we're shrinking?